Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
How's it, everybody? Welcome back to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Josh Lee Kwai.
And I'm DJ from the Jumbo Commander YouTube channel.
Jimmy is out of town, so DJ is filling in. You probably saw him on our M20 preview card video. He's still here. It's also the same day, and we're wearing the same clothes. Don't at me. Okay.
That's better than being a different day and wearing the same clothes, though.
Actually, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
So, DJ, this is a topic that you kind of brought up when we were kicking around ideas to talk about. We're calling it building your meta. It's about maintaining a healthy playgroup, or I guess playgroup is the right word, right?
Yeah. And ultimately, if you take some of this advice that we're going to share with you today, you can shape a meta from sort of nothing too. You can sort of maintain what you have, build something new, and sort of like create good relationships and good commander games.
Yeah. And you know, the goal is to make sure that everyone's having fun every time you play, and that'll make everybody want to play more often. And that can be harder than it sounds. Playgroups definitely are, you know, relationships among people, and those can have sort of their ups and their downs and their...
Yeah. But Josh, I have the most fun when I win. And I also don't have fun when I lose.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about all of those issues. Definitely that's a thing. But before we get into all that, we need to talk about our sponsors. CardKingdom.com/CommandZone. If you use that affiliate link when you order your Magic products, singles, you know, there's a lot to order right now. There's Modern Horizons, which is still there and awesome, and the draft format is sweet.
Yes.
And the cards are actually really sweet for Commander, too. If you haven't seen the new Game Nights, you should check it out. There's also M20, the new core set, which is right around the corner. And at the time we're recording this, Modern Horizons is not even out. But M20, very soon you'll be able to start pre-ordering. And our cards have already been spoiled. And some other cards are going to be... I mean...
My card's on the way.
Your card's on the way. You're going to want to get some of those cards, too. So go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone to pick up all that stuff you're supporting. The podcast, game nights, extra turns, all of our content. Also, when you get those cards, or even for your current cards, you want to protect that stuff. You want to play it onto a nice playmat so it doesn't get all dirty. Ultra Pro really does make the best products that go along with your Magic cards. We're talking dice, deck boxes, Eclipse sleeves, all that stuff.
And also, the art from Modern Horizons, to say, is spectacular. You open up those packs and see those little pieces of art in there, that just makes me just really want playmats with all of this art on it so I can just have it everywhere.
Yeah, I should have put it out here, but the Urza playmat.
What? You have an Urza playmat?
It's really sweet because the Urza art is really, really sweet. So make sure to also support Ultra Pro. You are supporting all of our content. And the final way is you can contribute to us directly if you go to patreon.com/commandzone. You can join us in our Discord server. DJ hangs out in there sometimes.
Yep, at Jumbo Commander in the Discord, and I can come in and say hi.
You can see game nights before anybody else. And also, we shout out one lucky patron every single episode. And this episode is dedicated to Terrence O'Brien. Terrence, you rock.
Thanks, Terrence.
Okay, so we're going to talk about building your meta, cultivating your play group. This sort of... We started this discussion, and you had a quote from somebody in your stream. Do you want to set it up?
Yeah. So I actually streamed for the second time ever.
You want to plug your stream? I mean, here we are.
No, plug it. I put it on YouTube Live because I don't actually have like people following me on Twitch or anything like that. But so I wanted to do a Modern Horizon set review.
Hold on. So If you subscribe to...
Oh, yeah. If you subscribe to my channel, to you'll get a notification.
Jungle Commander on YouTube, and you hit that little bell for notifications, then if and when DJ streams, you will get a notification.
Absolutely. So, okay. And if you follow me on Twitter, I put it out there on Twitter, too.
He's so, at Jungle Commander on Twitter.
There we go. All that good stuff.
Don't turn down an opportunity to plug your stuff.
That's right.
Okay. All right.
I'm just going to throw it in another time.
So you were streaming.
I was streaming. And going through the set review, we were talking about Urza. And people were hyped about Urza, and I'm for sure many of you are hyped about Urza. And I said, let's take a step back here. Okay, everyone.
Card pull is back, broken.
Pull back and say, this card is broken, but is it good for your playgroup? Like, is it good for the meta that you're in? Yes, it will win games, but is it healthy for your real life relationships, for the way that, for what you're bringing to the table? Spike Feeders was in the stream.
Spike Feeders, if you don't know, are a competitive EDH
YouTube channel.
Themed. Yeah, I was looking for the word like themed. Like
they
anyway.
Do gameplay. Their focus is competitive EDH.
Yeah, they do the top tier decks and play them against each other. Very good gameplay videos. If you go to Spike Feeders on YouTube, you'll find them that way.
Yeah. And just gave me a beautiful quote.
So this is from Spike Feeders in your stream.
Yeah. Launched this entire episode. You should build your meta as carefully as you build your deck.
That was DJ's mind being blown. We've said that same sentiment in some meta episodes we had way in the past. We haven't talked about meta in a long time, but I believe that, like, I used to run a basketball group in LA, and we would play, like, every Tuesday night, and I was in charge. Me and my best friend were in charge with, like, organizing who's going to be there and make sure the gym was available and all this stuff. And we learned very quickly that, and this could apply, obviously, to your playgroup, that, like, you have to take a very tight handle on things because it's so easy for you to get off the rails, and the whole group can tumble into the darkness if you don't cultivate it and pay very close attention to keeping it healthy.
Yeah.
So, you know, and we hear from people all the time, their playgroups break up, you know, and then a lot of times,
or they don't want to play anymore.
Yes.
You feel you go to a commander night, or you go to your local game store, and you have this anxiety about sitting down across from another player, or you feel like you love Magic, but you just don't feel like playing as much anymore. And that stinks.
Also, if it's your friend that feels that way, but not you, it still affects you in the same way because you need people to play with. And so it can be a situation where, like, something happened that isn't even, you're like, I'm no drama, but doesn't matter because it still affects me because those two now don't want to play or have beef or something happened. And it does affect me because if they don't want to play, I can't really play Commander because you just can't, you need more than... You know, you need a decent amount of people in a playgroup to regularly be able to meet. Like, you need more than four people, probably.
Yeah. And I think that people, when they're building decks, sometimes they're thinking of building the most powerful deck. They're thinking about building the deck that they want to build. And they might be pushing out of their head, you know, how this is going to fit into a larger plan, the plan of your metagame.
Right. So I wanted to talk about really quick some common issues that can crop up within playgroups. Something we hear about or I've seen a lot, there's the arms race, as they call it. So this is feeling that, like, well, DJ's going to go out and buy more cards and make new decks, and, like, I have to keep up, so I got to go do that. And
that can also be unhealthy for your wallet.
It can be hard.
Here we have a bling arms race.
Yeah, you and Jimmy. Hey, by the way, I've been working on my bling arms race. I'm about ready to throw down with you, too. But we'll talk about that in a later episode. But that can be tough because... When a play group, similar to like a basketball group, is a number of people, right? It's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Our play group is like 12 or 13 people. Not everybody is going to be on the same wavelength for what they're willing to spend, how much time they're willing to dedicate to just thinking up decks and stuff. And so there starts to be a disparity, a gap between what people are doing. And it can start to feel bad. And the people who, like, don't want to go to the store and constantly buy new cards and blah, 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 can't keep up. Eventually, they stop wanting to play, though, because this person's just way more into it than I am, and it's making it, like, feel like I never have a chance.
And that should be fun. Like, you should be able to have this be a casual game. Like, you should be able to say, look, I'm only going to spend $40 on this game, or, you know, $20 a month or something like that, and that should be fine. And it feels real bad when you feel like you've built this deck and it just can't keep up and everyone's leaving you behind.
So the arms race is something that's difficult for playgroups. There's the power level gap that's kind of related. Sometimes people are just playing at a power level that you either don't want to, or you know, they just know more about the game than you do. That's something we hear that can sort of hurt playgroups. Different players have different level investment in the game. It might just not just be money, but like we've all had that friend or two that kind of casually plays. But you know, we have a Commander channel on YouTube, podcast. This is my full time job. Like, it's somebody else who just kind of plays Commander could be like, listen, Josh is just way too into it for me. And that would totally make sense for them, but it might be a situation where that could create some tumult in your playgroup. Also, just personality clashes. You know, it's a social format. So not everybody gets along. People have personalities that just kind of, you know.
When you care a lot about something, then a lot of times there's emotion in there, and those emotions can come out.
So that's another thing that can kind of throw a wrench in the works. So we're going to kind of go through a lot of this stuff and try and help give some advice on how to keep things going smoothly so that everybody's having fun, but everybody also, you know, wants to. The real goal is everybody likes it when you start shuffling up the cards, and they want to do it again as soon as possible when you're done.
Then you play more games.
Yeah. Okay. So what are some keys to maintaining a healthy meta?
Well, starting off, we have just the baseline. This is, if you take one thing away from this entire podcast.
That's the graphic showing up.
Exactly. Good job, Josh. This one thing, it's all about communication.
Yep.
And that's the core of this entire thing. Like everything, if you're quiet and you don't talk with anyone, then you're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to solve any problems. Communication is super key. And
well, like you put down communication always.
Always.
Communication always.
Yeah. And this could be problem solving. It could be stuff outside the game. It's just talking with other people. And actually, communication just makes the game better, in my opinion. We'll talk about that a little bit later, about ways you can sort of bring out conversation, bring out communication in these games. Because Josh mentioned seconds ago, it's a social game.
Yep.
And that's what makes it fun.
That's what makes Commander Commander, really. Honestly, that's the biggest difference we have from all the other formats. Even though you do need some communication, like, hey, this thing triggers and I attack you and things like that. But you don't need the same level of communication that a Commander pod needs, right?
Exactly.
Like, hey, guys, can anybody destroy that thing? Because probably DJ is going to combo off next turn. Like, that's just a piece of Commander.
And I like games like that.
Oh, yeah, those
are the best. Where you go back and forth and you figure out what's going on and you work together as a team and you work against other people. It's great.
You had a sort of like, hey, here's something you might think about not doing because it actually might contribute to a bad play experience.
Yeah, I think that we should stop as a group doing the, let's put your commander face down. Everyone puts their commander face down and then surprise, here's my commander. Then they turn it up and that's the commander that they're playing.
Right.
It's kind of fun. And if your meta is healthy and balanced enough that all of your decks are really well to play against each other, then that's fine. But in most situations, you should pick your deck for the specific game, for what's going on. You shouldn't bring your low-powered budget deck to a competitive game.
You should, you need to let everybody know. And we talk about this all the time, too, that power scale, 1 to 10, whatever, however you want to do it, of, like, this is what everybody's playing. Is everyone around the same level? That communication at the start of the game. But I think you can do that with the flip-up thing, as long as you're like, hey, listen.
Yeah, you could do that, say, but
everyone's communication, at an 8, right? Like, yeah, no one's playing a 10 and no one's playing a 5, right? Okay, then this is one of mine.
And the core of that is the communication, right?
Yeah.
Is the okay, I've got about a 7 or an 8 or something like that. So I would say make sure that people know kind of the power level of your deck before you sit down and start playing.
Go ahead,
No, that's just sort of this starting point of starting off the game really fresh and starting off with this idea of communication. It really sets a tone for the game.
I just want to cut off a bunch of questions we're going to get now because people always want to know, like, how do I exactly tell the power level of my deck on a 1 to 10 scale? You do not. It isn't. It's an art more than a science. You guess. What you're trying to avoid is a gap that's huge. You don't want to be playing an 8 when everybody else is playing a 5. You're not trying to avoid playing an 8 against a 7 or a 6. That's going to happen. That's fine. You just don't want to be like, hey, I'm at a 10. Oh, crap. I shouldn't have played my 5. I can play my 8, though. So you just want to be within a range that's acceptable. You're not trying to hone in on like, oh, my gosh, dude. Mine's a 7. Yours an 8. How dare you? That's fine. That game should be fine. You just don't want to be like 12 steps below them.
Yeah. And okay. If you willingly bring a 5 to a 10 fight, you should know what you're getting in for.
You probably won't be mad when they combo off because exactly. They told you they were going to do that.
Yeah. Exactly. And then that helps build this healthy playgroup, this healthy meta, because you're not upset that they busted out this 10 deck because they told you.
Now, what can be a little bit of a problem if you're like, hey, I've got this 5 and everybody, and there's nothing that they decide to play a 10. Well, I'm going to play my 10.
Mm.
You know, that's a thing where, but the communication's important. Okay, well, one of us has to do something different here, right? Because this is just not going to lead to a fun experience, probably. Unless you're like, okay, fine, let's just see how it does. Then that's fine. That could be fine.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to lose, totally, you know. Okay. The next point you had here was get political.
And I think this is tied really closely to the communication.
Yeah.
Whenever you're doing politics, you are opening up the lines of communication. You want to make deals. And so you're talking with people. You're, you know, convincing people to do your bidding.
Or... is that how you see it? It's true, though.
Right. No, but even here's the thing. Even if you're making deals, breaking deals, doing all sorts of like that, you're opening up the lines of communication. And also what you're doing is you're creating a balance that exists outside of your physical cards.
Right. I really like this. You said that political cards can help even the playing field, even if one person's deck is more powerful than the other's. So one of the examples you put down here is Fractured Identity.
Yeah.
Which exiles something and then creates a copy of it for everybody else. That's actually really true, because if somebody's got a really powerful deck and you do that, well, your best permanent, everybody else has a copy of that now.
That's you a really way that have reestablished a new power dynamic with a single political card.
Right. It might not make you win, but it can bring down the most powerful deck.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's an interesting idea I hadn't really thought about in those terms before.
Yeah, and political alignment has the potential, by the way, to cause problems in your meta.
Right.
You know, if you are constantly picking on someone, or if you're constantly breaking deals and stuff like that, then you could actually cause a bigger disruption than you mean to. But in many situations, if you are politicking well, if you're really opening up these conversations, even if they might be like, no, I'm not doing this deal with you,
that's my favorite move.
Yeah, I know, right? It still opens up those lines of communication. And so what it does is it helps build that critical first step of communication first.
Yeah, politics is social interaction, which can lead to more communication, right? Which is good if that's your philosophy for your playgroup that, hey, we're going to talk about things. That's generally going to be good. The next point here was make adjustments. So this can mean a couple of things. It can mean adjusting your decks to be either stronger or weaker. DJ, you said you actually like tuning down your decks.
Yeah, I actually really like tuning down. This is where Josh and I
sort of differ, but
that's fine. I actually really enjoy tuning down the power level of my decks, because in many cases what I'm doing is I'm not actually removing powerful cards. I'm usually adding in powerful, more expensive, like 7 drops and 8 drops, and like big splashy cards. And so what I'm doing is I'm taking down the consistency and I'm making the curve a little bit higher. And that's how I power down my decks. And actually, I feel like they play very fun.
Yeah, and that would be my advice to anyone who wants to power down their deck. We get asked this a lot too, because people just, you know, oh, my playgroup doesn't like this deck, or they think my decks are too powerful, but I'm not really sure how to build less powerful decks. One of the best ways to do it is like take out your tutors, and in place of the tutors, just put in a couple of big splashy things.
Mind's Dilation.
Yeah, it will increase the variance of your deck, and it won't necessarily increase the top end power. Decrease the top end power. It'll just make it a little less consistent. I would also maybe cut down on some of the super fast mana stuff, because a lot of times your deck is too powerful, not because of what it's doing, but it's when it's doing it. So it's like some of that stuff is fine turn 12, you know, 14, but probably your playgroup's not ready to handle it turn 6 and 7. And so that's a way to detune. I'm not a big fan of detuning my decks, because I always feel bad when I'm playing them of like, when this deck, you know, had X, Y, and Z in it, it was so much better, and I just think that during the game. So to me, I rather just have certain decks that are built to be less powerful, and I just concentrate, or I consciously don't keep tuning them at a certain point. It's like, okay, this deck's good. I'm just not really going to mess with it because I have tons of 7 and 8s. I don't need another one. This needs to stay at a 6.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Stay at a 5. Because 80% of my decks are in this range. I don't need more of that. And so I have like 3 decks that I'd say are in a 5 and 6 range, and they can play against pre-con all the way to like decently tuned stuff.
You have about 3 or 4 decks in that range too.
Yeah, and I got like 10 or 12 in the 7 and 8 yeah, range, yeah. Right? And then I got like 2 or 3
yeah, I got that 2 are above in the 8. Top yeah, range too.
And so
but the thing is that's our meta. So we focus the majority of our decks in the range of our meta, and then we have flexibility built in.
Right. But I do like what you said about tuning the decks down. I think making adjustments can also mean adjusting to certain deck styles. Ooh. Or adjusting to strategies that are prevalent or sort of rise up in your meta. So like, Hogak just came out, let's say. That's going to be a dredgy, graveyardy type deck that we saw Jimmy play a really cool deck on game nights. And that may be a strategy that in your meta hasn't been around much. I mean, if your playgroup's been around a while, graveyard strategies, obviously you're going to have seen them. But, you know, it can something like that. This is an example.
Yeah.
And suddenly you need to play some Grafdigger's Cages, and you need to play some Leyline of the Voids, and you need to play some Bajuka Bogs, and you need to play some graveyard hate type of stuff. You need some of it in there because that's a axis that you're not used to dealing with. And I think in a healthy meta, people are doing that. They're going, oh, okay, here's a deck, and it's getting stronger, and I'm going to go and I'm going to create a little package that's good at fighting against that deck.
That is a productive arms race, yes. Basically, where someone's like, well, I'm going to take my deck in this direction to get an advantage at the table. And then someone else is like, well, I'm going to answer it in this way, or I'm going to take my threat above yours and get bigger. That's a fun push and pull.
That's why strategy games are awesome. It's thrust, counter thrust, riposte, parry. Like, that's what's awesome about strategy and tactics is like, I'm going to go on this level and then I'm going to level you up by thinking on this angle. Yeah. That's not like, I'm going to go buy dual lands, you know?
Yeah. And that's the arms race that people feel bad about is that we both come in with pre-cons and then I'm like, okay, I'm going to buy a Consecrated Sphinx and
Mana Crypt and a Force of Will. Yeah.
Yeah. And all this crazy stuff. And then suddenly I'm unbeatable.
But if somebody's like, oh, I need, to be able to exile enchantments because, you know, you have some powerful enchantments that deck rests on. I think that's not an arms race. That's a healthy adjustment to the meta.
Yeah.
You know? Okay. Before we continue here, we are going to take a quick break and we're going to hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly. Which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angi.com.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
You're John Chespagon.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Okay, we're back. We are talking about building your meta, maintaining it, cultivating it, keeping it healthy. Yes, feel free to throw all the cultivate Kodama's Reach jokes at me. All right. Anytime you say that word, somebody's going to make a joke about it. Yes, I know it's a card.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good card, too.
Yeah, it is. Well, the winningest card in Commander, according to our stats, basically. Right? Okay. So we're running down the points we talked about. Communication, always. We talked about getting political, making adjustments. Now, We're going to talk about changing your perspective.
This is my favorite one, Josh.
Hard to do.
Very hard to do. Basically, we have a perspective going into the game where it's I win or I lose. And a lot of times we get tied up into that so much, we only have happiness. We only have a good time if we win. And if we lose, we have a bad time. And that if everyone goes into the playgroup like that, then three people are going to leave upset and one person's going to leave happy.
Well, I mean, you might play multiple games, but yeah, sure, yeah. Sure. I mean, I would say this skill, the ability to sort of go into your programming and reset the parameters, is a great skill to have in life.
I agree.
Figure out this skill, you can sort of be so much happier in general by just understanding like when it's best to reset the parameters and to figure out what the win condition is, because it's not always winning the game, right?
Because it's not. And it doesn't happen like that in life all the time, where you can do everything right and things still can't turn out your way.
Right.
And instead you have to say, well, actually I made all the right calls. I went through the process the way I was supposed to be. I was successful. Oh, even though I didn't win.
Right. Yeah, it's like if you were like, oh, I'm going to write a book. Just finishing the book could be the win condition, right?
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't at the end of it want to be like, oh, it didn't make the national, you know, bestseller list or something. But for somebody who's written a bunch of books, maybe that is their win condition. That's their parameter. Or, you know, that's just an example. But I think being able to sort of look at situations and determine a parameter and a win condition or a goal that is fitting for you and is going to increase your happiness and a lot of times, I do this all the time. So it's a skill that I've definitely cultivated.
I really enjoy it too. Basically, it's like an achievement-based game.
Yeah.
So I have certain decks where I say, okay, I can win the game, but really what I want to be doing is blank. Right. I want to get 4 biovisionaries on the battlefield. I want to work towards that. Or I want to do something cool. And I think there's a lot of you out there that are trying to do cool stuff more than you want to win. And I think a lot of you are happy playing Commander.
And sometimes you play to win, and you can switch this from game to game. Like, yeah. I definitely, if I've won a couple games in the night, I reset the parameter to like, okay, you know, I've had my fun, I won. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to play this deck, and, you know, I'm going to try and just make the biggest, splashiest move, or I'm going to try and, like, you know, mess with one specific player at the table, or I'm going to, like, try and sow chaos in some other way. Or maybe, you know, I've done this a lot where I'm like, I'm not going to try and win with my cards. I'm going to try and win specifically with politics. So this whole game, yeah. I'm going to be very like political.
I have a very ruthless Sultai lands deck, and it includes Villainous Wealth. And so sometimes I'm like, okay, this is going to be a Villainous Wealth game,
right,
where I'm working towards that win condition because that's how I want to win. And that can be really fun.
But it might not be the best way to win in every situation, but you just said, okay, for this game, that's my goal.
Now, and the goal essentially in any of this thing is to have fun. Right.
Right. And I think that's what gets clouded though, right? People think the goal is to win when actually
the goal is to have fun. I also think that you can do something with reframing yourself, but you can also do a really good job with building your playgroup with this exact same strategy, pointing out other people's achievements when they do something cool so that they feel like they've won even though they haven't.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, Josh does something cool. You can Josh.
That was sweet.
That was so cool. And then Josh feels good, and it doesn't matter if he won or not because he did the cool thing.
I've also talked about many times where, like, you know, there's been a million times in games where I'm like, you know, like, Vinny's got doing this cool thing and he's going to do this thing. And I have Cursing Grip in my hand. I'm just going to hold it. I'm just not going to cast it. I'm going to let Vinny do his cool thing. He built his deck. He bought the cards. He went online. He thought about it for hours and hours. Like, you know, now next game, when he tries to do the same thing, I'm going to stop it. But I want Vinny to like have that moment. I want whoever. I want DJ to have that moment. Like, I haven't seen this deck do the thing before, or maybe I even have, but it's really being cool. I'm going to let him do it. Like, why not? Why not let your friend like feel good about it and feel really excited
about
it?
And call them out when they do something great. Yeah. And what do you want to work towards winning, or do you want to work towards, how about this scenario? Have you ever had someone at a Commander game be like, oh, I need to take a picture of that?
Yeah. Yeah. Craig.
Isn't that such a good feeling?
I would hearken, and because people kind of, I've had pushback, people like, you don't always try to win. How I would hearken it to, like, I used to run that basketball group, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of times where, like, I'm on a team and that player over there is not as good a shooter as I am. So technically, I should shoot the ball every time. I shouldn't let them ever shoot. But that's not how you want to.
You just never pass them. Oh, geez. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's.
But that's what ball hogs do, and I'm not a ball hog.
And so doesn't that build an unhealthy playground?
Yeah, and that person wants to have fun playing basketball that night, and they're a friend of mine, and I like them. And after this, we're going to go to the bar. We're going to have a beer, and we're going to laugh about the stupid fouls that we had or whatever. And they're open in the corner. I'm going to pass them the ball. Does that mean I'm not trying to win as hard as possible? Maybe, but I'm not going to become a professional basketball player any day soon. So, what I really want is for the group to stay healthy and for everybody to have fun. And that's what I consider like not cross and gripping their thing sometimes. Sometimes, Vinny, I'm going to stop you most of the time. But sometimes, yeah, we're going to let them go off. So I think that's an important lesson.
Yeah, I agree.
This is a cool one. And I've only done this a few times. And usually it's because I don't have my decks on me or I'm at an event or something. But I would like to do this more. I would like to get your decks, DJ. So next time this happens, let's
you're
do
totally,
that.
Yeah.
Or Kyle's. Actually, I want Kyle's decks. it's swapping decks.
Yeah.
So try playing with, your friend's deck. And Jimmy and I have done this quite a bit. But with everybody else, I don't think as much. Where you're just like, hey, give me one of your decks.
This happens a lot because I have some friends that do limited and play modern or legacy and stuff like that. And they have a commander deck, but they're like tired of playing that one deck. So they're like, here, let me grab one of your decks.
Yeah.
And I think it actually brings a lot of perspective to a meta and makes it a little bit more healthy because you're literally walking in someone else's shoes. You're playing someone else's deck.
Right. Something we talked about that's really cool and I do want to try. Maybe you'll be down to try it with us. With Graham and Kathleen, when they were on the podcast, we talked about blind commander, which was this thing where it's not the same as swapping decks exactly, because you're building a deck that you know someone else is going to pilot, and they're going to pick it up blind, and everyone else is going to make, in that pod, is going to make a deck for somebody else that they're going to play blind.
I would totally do that.
And I threw in a little riff that you make it like backdrafting, so like, you get a point if you win the game, but you also get a point if your deck wins the game or something like that, so that you don't just purposely build like the crappiest deck you can come up with.
Banding tribal.
Yeah, exactly. So, that would be, I think, a fun exercise to go through.
I think it would be fun too.
Just spices things up too. If things are going kind of rockily in your playgroup, you might be able to just get people to try something like that or just swap decks just to like break it up. Just break up the ice of the monotony of the same thing that's happening, which is usually what's causing problems. Yeah. Is like the same thing keeps happening.
Oh, absolutely. And do you know what I think it also does is it puts like walking in someone else's shoes, it puts you in someone else's perspective, but it also kind of has you rooting for your friend.
Right.
And
yeah, because I built that deck. I want to see it do a cool thing. Yeah.
As soon as you're not focused solely on your own victory and you're thinking
and
about other people.
General.
Yeah. And you're thinking about other people, thinking about their deck and thinking about other stuff. Then I think that brings a new level of perspective and really creates a healthy environment of really thinking about others and thinking about your meta.
Yeah. If you're in that headspace, it feels like, and most of that your play group is that, that feels like a really good place to be. The next idea here for these are, I guess we're sort of straying into the realm of like, here's some stuff you can try if your playgroup is hitting one of those rocky patches.
Definitely.
And I would say too, you can feel when those rocky patches are coming and you should try these things earlier rather than later. The longer that it goes on, the more the resentment builds and fosters.
You're totally right.
It can be harder to sort of U-turn and get out of that little cul-de-sac. So,
gosh, Josh, that's such a good point. Because when people are already sitting down and annoyed each other, you're not, let's switch up decks. No, I don't want to.
Right.
Like, there's so much more resistance to that. Oh, you're so right.
If you have an inkling that there's probably some social trouble bubbling under the surface, if you feel that, it's there. You're not imagining it. So you should try and like, oh, hey, that's the point at which to be like, okay, let's maybe swap decks. Or, I'll change my win con percentage. Maybe I'm the problem. You usually, listen, we get emails from people all the time. My playgroup targets me first every time now. You knew that was coming. You had to. You can't be totally oblivious. You've won way too many games and they've been grumbling about it. Another thing your playgroup can try is to set some limits. Mm-hmm. So this is things like building special decks that are maybe they're budget constrained. This can help with your arms race problem. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's popper decks, or maybe, hey, everybody choose a commander for everybody else and they'll build that for themselves. But
oh, that's fun.
That can kind of keep you out of like, I'm not choosing Urza for DJ, but you can build, whatever. Or maybe even a theme, hey.
Yeah, that would be great too. Choose a theme for each person. And that actually starts having us thinking about the game in terms of creativity rather than thinking about in terms of winning or losing. And so it's about making a creative deck or building with these restrictions. I really like price restrictions or availability restrictions. Have you ever, for example, sometimes when I was old, when I used to go to GPs and were in the main event, there's a lot of downtime between them, but I still loved Commander. And so we would take $50 and say, you have to build a Commander deck in the room.
and you could only spend this amount of money.
Exactly. And so you'd be going around to all these vendors and like going through all this stuff and being like, no, no, that's too expensive. And you're going through and trying to build a deck in between rounds.
Sounds like a fun day.
It is a fun day. Yeah. The thing that stinks a little bit is that like sometimes you're buying stuff with that $50. You're like, I have four of these at home,
but I just need this,
but
right
I need
now.
It right now. And it's going to go in.
It's a magic card. It'll still be worth it.
Exactly. But, and sometimes you're like, you know what? I have this card at home. I don't want another one. I want that card for my collection. So I'm going to put it in this deck.
That's pretty cool. You know, something people do also is like start with a pre-con and then allow for like upgrades. You wrote down Commander Leagues here, which is another thing you could try. And you could do a soft league or a hard league. So a hard one would be like their point systems and it's breaking down in this specific way. You could also say, hey, everybody, we're going to start with a pre-con and you can add 5 cards to it, you know, and then next week we'll add 5 cards and then next week. And that just limits the amount of craziness that stuff can get up to. And that can be fun.
There are some more structured leagues where if you win, you can add 1 card. If you come in second place, you can add 2 cards. If you come in third place, you can add 3 cards. And if you come in last place, you can add 4 cards.
That's cool. It's like
kind of self-balances a little
bit.
It's
like the NFL draft or something, yeah. Where like the team that won the Super Bowl doesn't get the best player out of college.
Exactly. Yeah. And those, what they do is that also you have communication about this. The rules are set up beforehand, and it provides some limits on what you're building. And limits breed creativity, and that could be good.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. I like that idea. You know, I put a thing here, and it's something to remember always when you're in a playgroup and like you're the one feeling like the arms race has gotten out of control, or you're the one feeling like the power level gap is too hard, or you're one of them feeling like this person's just more into it than you are. There's a tendency to be like, I'm right, they're wrong, they should be doing what I think. That's not the case at all. What's the problem is that you're not on the same page. They are not wrong, though. They want to play at a certain kind of level, and they want to play decks that are 10 out of 10s, and they want to build Urza. That doesn't mean they're wrong. It just means that the two of you aren't compatible. And how can you bridge that gap? And one of the ways I like to say is like, because you're going to be like, let's swap decks, let's set limits, let's blah, blah, blah. You have to allow for some cheat meals in there. And this was my point, which is, a cheat meal, and by that I mean like, if you start a diet tomorrow, you're never going to succeed at that, I promise, if you just say, I'm never eating French fries again. That's just not going to work. That's not how life works. You're going to eat French fries. What you have to say, and what works is like, I'm going to just limit the amount that I'm allowed to eat certain things. And so that's what a cheat meal is, right? Like, it's so that you can say to yourself, oh, I'm gonna have a burger and fries once a week now instead of 5 times a week or whatever. And this should be the mentality here. Listen, you wanna play Urza, I don't wanna have to keep up with that arms race. But I can't tell you, you never get to play powerful decks. So, and we started doing this.
That wouldn't work.
That's
like,
not
if
fair.
You just say, like, I can never play Urza, like, I'm gonna feel bad and I'm gonna go somewhere where I can play Urza.
Right, but maybe we could work out a thing where I'm like, listen, I know you want to play the powerful decks. I'll play my most powerful deck against yours 1 time per night.
Yeah.
And then 1 time per night, we do the limit thing. And that's a nice compromise that both people may be able to live with. And also, it's way more likely to make that person try something that they wouldn't want to try. And they might be like, oh, I like this limit thing. Let's do that more. But they'll never do it if you're just like, listen, you're never playing Urza again. We're not doing that. We're not a competitive EDH.
And that's you shutting down someone rather than having a conversation about it. Yeah.
So we start doing this thing where at the end of the night, the last game of the night, play the most powerful deck you've got.
Because we don't want it to drag on for forever.
It works for a lot of reasons because the last game of the night is the one you don't want to last 4 hours. But also, like, that allows people in our playgroup, and there are a few of them now, that have like really powerful decks to know that I'm going to get to play one of my powerful decks. And if that's what they love about Commander the most, I don't want to tell them they never get to do that. But at the same time, we're most of the time playing with 7s and 8s. So it's not right for them to pull out their Urza decks and stuff. And so I built a deck, you know, I dusted off my Derevi deck recently just to be able to play that, you know, that last game of the night. But at the same time, meet them halfway, allow them the cheat meal.
Absolutely. I also like that it's the last game of the night, so I can make the most play mistakes possible with the most complicated deck.
That's my problem with my really good decks is that
they're always complicated.
I don't play them very often either. So yeah. they're the decks I should like to play them well. I would have to play them a lot, but I don't play them a lot because they're so good. And so every time I pull them out, I just constantly am like, that's not the line I should be taking. What did I do? This deck's really good, guys. I promise. It's a 10. I swear it is. All right. And the last point we're going to talk about here is branching out. So this is a good point you brought up. I'll let you do it. This is
sure. Basically, sometimes groups get really into each other. You even if you have a healthy meta, then sometimes your meta just builds into itself, and there's no outside influence, and so it basically goes in a weird direction. You know, I've played against people at GPs where they're like, "I can't believe the number of board wipes you run." Am I my store? Maybe I see one board wipe in a deck or something like that. And to me, that's like ludicrous. But they're like, no, the meta just doesn't have board wipes. Or my meta doesn't have spot removal. Some people are in their meta where they're like, well, we don't run any removal. We just bash big creatures against each other. Okay.
How do you deal with a Panharmonicon?
I'm not saying that's wrong. That's great that their meta is functioning that way. But sometimes that can drift into a weird place. Especially when one person starts running those board wipes with a single target removal and three other players are saying, well, wait a second, my Ketterk Leviathan is getting killed. What's going on?
Right.
You know? And so bringing in outside influences, having some fresh blood, some fresh insight can actually help liven up a play group and can get everyone thinking a little bit more critically about what kinds of decks you're playing and how they're interacting with one another.
And this doesn't have to be like necessarily bringing in new people. You wrote down like maybe you're consuming content. Maybe you're going to an event just mm-hmm. to like, you know, interact with new players, but you could be like listening to podcasts or just going to EDH Rec and reading some articles.
Yeah.
That can sort of change your perspective and open it up. We mentioned earlier that I believe a healthy meta is one that is evolving, you know, decks are changing, not like necessarily like frantically, but like, oh, I'm adding a little more graveyard hate. Mm-hmm. Oh, I got to have a counterspell or two. Oh, I'm not going to be quite as graveyard centric because they're ready for me, blah, blah, blah. That move and counter move is really healthy. And what can happen in playgroups when they're insular is that everyone just stagnates. And now it's just like we're meeting and we're playing every other week. But for the last 8 play sessions, every deck is just basically the same and we're playing the same thing. And that can start to feel boring and make it so people don't want to play. And
yeah.
Freshening things up can be helpful. It can sort of re-enliven a playgroup that's stagnated, I think.
Absolutely.
Okay. There's one last thing we wanted to touch on here.
Yeah, yes. One thing also that we could do is in branching out, we talked about branching out, you could actually branch out into sort of new ways of playing, almost like Blind Commander, almost like the League or something like that.
Yeah.
We were thinking maybe sometimes we do this and play a Hidden Partners.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We play Hidden Partners sometimes. Yep. We play, what's the one?
There's like Emperor.
The Emperor, yeah.
There's Plane Chase.
And you could also do something like play Oathbreaker.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's something that also came up in the stream where people are talking about Oathbreaker. And actually, I think that with a new format, people might be approaching and not having enough communication with their playgroup. And this could be another sort of point where there could be trouble on the horizon. If one person's playing Narset Windfall, and you're playing, Josh is playing Narset Windfall. And I'm playing.
I can play the werewolf deck.
And I'm playing Werewolf Moonmist. Like, basically, we could come with these preconceptions about Commander to this brand new format. And then suddenly, if we don't have the communication, if we don't have a lot of the things that we've been talking about, we can just run up against each other. And then, oh man, this sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like Oathbreaker is an interesting thing. I'm going to go off on a little sidetrack here, but this made me think of something because have you played much Oathbreaker?
I have not played much Oathbreaker, but I've tested a few decks and done some stuff.
You made a video on your channel?
I did make a video on my channel.
So I would like to try it out. Definitely worth thinking about it. It's tough because so much content is focused around Commander, and anytime we play Magic, I feel like I have to play Commander because I need that to be related to what we do here. And I don't have a bunch of other extra time to be devoted to what is essentially like a different game, Oathbreaker similar. It does look cool and fun. I wonder if Oathbreaker would not be better served by foregoing the social contract aspect of Commander and just saying, listen, the whole point of the format is to be fast, right? And just etching out their little niche as a, if you want to put Armageddon in your thing, like there's no social contract as far as that. Yeah, as far as that's concerned, Oathbreaker is just people try to win quickly, and that's totally fine.
I think you've identified.
And we'll ban out Narset if we have to, if it's too powerful. But we're gonna say like we shouldn't have this stigma that EDH does upon like, hey, what's your deck level? Is it a 5 or is it an 8? Because EDH already has that. They're already doing that.
I think you've identified the key point, which is if everyone's jumping into this format, and people will jump in because it's fun, and people will find new players that are not in their existing meta to play against, if you don't have these positive conversations, if you don't do the whole thing that that you were mentioning before about my deck's a 5, my deck's a 7, or an 8, or something like that, then you will not have a good time. These decks will collide and not do what you want them to do. It will be a bad play experience.
It's a matter of setting expectations, and I think Oathbreaker as a format would be better served to set the expectation of like, listen, everyone's just going to build the most powerful thing they can. They're going to try to win the games. There might be politics and everything, just like EDH, but you know, we're going to maintain the ban list as competitively as possible as far as like we're going to ban out the cards we think are too powerful, and everything else, people should just do it. And that's how we should play these games, because that will create the faster games, and it will put it in its own place that's not related exactly to Commander. Because right now, I'm not as excited to play Oathbreaker because it doesn't seem that different. And if it existed in that space, I think that would be a breath of fresh air of like, no one's going to get mad at me if I play Narset Windfall as long as it's legal. And that's because just what the format expectation is.
Yeah, because I have a deck full of Fluster Storms and Force of Wills and Force of Negations and all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah, or yeah. I'm playing something and I've got Armageddon as my signature spell.
Yeah.
And and somebody else is going to be something else they think is really powerful, and that's going to be totally fine.
If you're saying that this is a format of 8 through 10s, then that's good because you don't need to have that conversation. But we already have a very limited pool of planeswalkers. Are we narrowing this down way too much by saying that this is a 8, 9, 10 format?
Maybe. Yeah. No, it's fair because it turns a lot of decks. It probably makes it so that only, you know,
a finite number of decks.
But there's already not that many. Like, you know, honestly, there's not that many planeswalkers. I don't know.
There are more being created every day.
I mean, maybe I'm totally off base and I haven't played it a lot. So it's obviously like something that
it doesn't matter if we're off base or not. We're talking about a real issue, which is the differing power levels of brand new format. You know, that's what we're talking about. Your solution is, hey, maybe the push should be this competitive end.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's a solution to the problem of...
Would you be more excited to play it if it was like you knew that was the case? Or would you be less excited to play it if that was the case? Where you're just going to like build the best deck you can. You're going to go in and you're going to fire it off against people. And you're not going to have to worry about like, does my deck...
Because no, I would be less excited to play for it. But that's just me because I like brewing sometimes more than playing. I like jankier, lower power level decks a little bit more. Like, I would rather play a 6 that does something big and splashy and cool than an 8 that's tuned really, really nicely. But that's me, and that's my play style. That's my, you know.
Yeah, no, and I totally get that. I just feel like I have Commander for that.
You're right.
So it's like, every time somebody says that to me, like, oh, you can build a janky thing. Yeah, but I do that already. Like, I have janky decks. I got, you know, I told you, I got like 3 or 4 5s and 6s. Those are not good decks, but they're fun. They do cool stuff. Every once in a while, they have some, you know, combination of cards that no one's ever seen before.
So the Planeswalker and the spell don't differentiate it enough in your mind. So instead, if there's a power level differentiation, then there's a reason to sort of play it.
Yeah, or just a different expectation from the format to me, maybe. And I could be totally off base.
No, but again, we're not making broad strokes about the entire format. We're talking about you from a personal point.
They're at a point where they are, you know, it's definitely the popularity of it is growing. A lot of people are talking about it, and they need to gain control of whatever it is and market it in the correct way. Does that make sense?
What if they have no desire to sell it or market it? What if they want it to be a format of the people that just naturally goes its path?
And grassroots just goes, which I guess they could do that. It's just less likely to work than something that's shepherded in some way. They need to shepherd it correctly is all I'm saying.
Another follow-up question. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Another question. Does the format have more potential to success if they go 8, 9, 10, or does it have more potential for success if they say, nah, it's casual. This actually should be a 4, 5, 6 format.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I can't answer that question. It's to me, I can only answer for me when I hear that, like it doesn't appeal to me in any way. Cause I already have a format that I'm invested in that does that thing. So to me, pushing it a little up the chain makes it more appealing because it's like, oh yeah, that's not something. And it naturally fits into, it's shorter, it's faster.
Mm-hmm.
I can pull out my Oathbreaker deck in times when I can't play a Commander game because of the time constraint.
Yeah, that's the advantage involved. That you really will grab onto is that the speed. And so if you dirtle, you just have a 60 card deck that dirtles versus a 100 card deck that dirtles.
Why aren't we just playing our Commander decks? I don't understand why that format needs to exist then. Obviously it lets you play different cards in the command zone, but I guess to me, that's never been what Commander's about. To me, Commander has been about sitting down with my friends, having a leisurely, laughing, political, janky, you know, fun time, more like a board game. Mm-hmm. But I don't need another thing that does that within Magic because I already have Commander. So to me, I'm like, well, what is Oathbreaker doing? If it's just like, hey, different deck building constraints, that's not really that amusing to me.
That could be fun, but it's not going to gain the level of traction that something as established as Commander has.
I just don't think it establishes itself as something else that's far enough away from Commander. And to me, that's just like, oh, well, it could etch out its own space that it has that nothing else does. And I think that would maybe be in its benefit, but maybe not. Okay, so that was a totally different tangent about Oathbreaker that we didn't mean to get into. But
it was a little bit of a tangent, but it still is grounded in what we're talking about, which is that when you come to the table and people have different expectations, then you could have problems.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then also
setting expectations is so important.
Exactly. And so your suggestion is that for Oathbreaker to be sort of successful in your mind, you would want sort of the big push from the format to define the expectations. That could be successful or not successful, but that would make you happier. You'd be likely.
I mean, it would draw me personally more towards.
And I think there's a lot of people that think like you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe. You know? I mean, there's probably a ton of people who are like, but I want to play my werewolf deck. I get it. You could still do that, but the default expectation wouldn't be that necessarily. Whereas in Commander, the default expectation I feel like, and I could be wrong, but I feel like is where we sit. It's the sevens and the eights.
It is the default expectation.
People do not default expect that like somebody's going to combo out on turn 5 or 6.
The default expectation is not tens, not combos, and the default expectation is not like
miscut cards or
precons or weird stuff like that. Yeah, which again, like does talk to some level of communication. Like that is the expectation. So by the way, if you are doing something that's not that, you have to be extra clear about the decks that you're bringing to the table.
So Oathbreaker could still have that space and that wiggle room, but the default expectation, I think, could be a little higher on the power scale and would be more appealing to me because of that.
Just my opinion. No, it's Josh's opinion. My opinion is that I actually think that some of the higher power levels, you know, might be too oppressive and narrow the format too much in that high power area. And I would like to play more. I would think that they should actually skew it a little bit lower and say the expectation should be that this is a 4 or 5 level format where, you know, you're going for the planeswalker you love and the theme you love.
I mean, to contradict myself, they have limited ability to ban things because of the card pool is so low. There just aren't that many planeswalkers.
Compared to legendary creatures, it's tiny.
Oh, it's super tiny. And a lot of them are just completely unplayable. And they also have color restraints. Like, there's no 4 colors. There's no 5 colors.
Very few 3 colors.
Very few 3s. So.
And with the 3s, there's 1 Esper. There's 1 ban.
So let's imagine they had to like ban one of those because it was too powerful because it was a competitive expectation format. Then all of a sudden you're just cutting off. So maybe I'm completely wrong. I don't know. I was just trying to, in my mind, think about a way that it would be appealing to me. And I'm not sure what that is because again, a lot of the time I'm like, I why don't I just play Commander?
Don't yell at Josh. Like, he's afraid that you're going to yell him in the comments. Like, give him some constructive feedback of say, like, this is a distinct advantage. Like, I've played it. This is how it's healthy and fun in my playgroup.
All right. Also, are you part of a healthy, long-standing playgroup? This is to the listeners. Do you have any tips for anybody? You know, I think, was it you that was like a raid leader in World of Warcraft?
Yes, I was.
I think people.
No, I wasn't. I was a
guild leader.
I was a guild leader, but actually, one of the big things that made my guild being a guild leader successful is that I did not lead raids.
Okay, gotcha. Because you knew you weren't good at leading the raids.
But no, like you delegated. I don't even think I should be leading raids. Is that managing a? For example, sometimes someone that has the direction for the whole company shouldn't be managing certain people. There should be some level of distinction. So if there's a problem with, like in the everyday raid, like getting loot or, you know, a personal problem, they should be able to come to me outside of the raid structure as the guild leader.
Okay, well...
Sorry.
We had a Mazan. We had a Mazan who was also a guild leader.
And oh, really?
I think he was raid leader too. So you guys could get into it about that. But I was saying some people out there have a higher level of experience organizing groups and maintaining them and keeping them healthy and dealing with the interpersonal relationships and the stuff that comes up. And I think those people, if you're here in the comments, it would be nice to hear your little tips and tricks and advice to people that we hear from all the time. You know, literally we get an email every couple of weeks about playgroups that are breaking up or problems with playgroups.
Yeah.
And you know,
sucks.
Yeah. And so maybe this could be a place people could sort of pick through the comments and find some little bits and pieces of advice besides the ones we gave. So I'd be excited to hear that from all of you. Always asking for help from the brain trust. Also, if you want to support this show, you want to support game nights, you want to support all of our content, you should go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. If you use that affiliate link when you order all your Magic products, your singles, Modern Horizons, M20, anything at all, you really are supporting all of our content. And when you get all that stuff, you want to protect it. You want to make it look nice and shiny and sweet. You want to put it in Eclipse Sleeves by Ultra Pro. You want to play it on an Ultra Pro playmat. You want to put it in an Ultra Pro deck box. You want to have those awesome metal dice from Ultra Pro. They really do make awesome stuff. And by supporting them, you are supporting us. Okay, it's time for the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. I hear you have another podcast.
I do, another podcast. Okay. I only came prepared with one end step.
DJ's just the best. That's why we keep having him back.
Like, let's just pull out my phone and come up with a second one. My second podcast that I recommend is Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Conan O'Brien has a podcast, and I actually think what makes his podcast so good is just his ability to riff and go off on weird tangents. In fact,
about this is Oathbreaker? The one,
seriously. No, but this is actually the one podcast where I listen to the advertisements because he reads the advertisements in like a weird way and goes completely off script and sometimes I'm sure infuriates the advertisers, but he's Conan O'Brien, so he's allowed to do that. And it's, and every step is just so entertaining. The premise of the show is that he doesn't have any friends. He's neurotic.
And he needs more friends.
He needs more friends. And so he invites a bunch of famous people on to just like kind of chat and like be a friend with him.
Sounds funny.
Yeah.
I like Conan. I used to work out in the same gym as him because I worked at Universal on the back lot. And it was a little bit of a rocky time for him, as it turns out. They built a huge stage for him to take over the Tonight Show?
Yes.
And I worked right across. My window from my edit bay looked at the building they built for him, the stage. And then he would be at the gym sometimes. Very tall gentleman. Only for a couple of months. It didn't last very long at all. They spent longer building the building than he was there. So anyway, that's a...
Late night is a ruthless...
A rough game.
Is a ruthless business.
Talk my about gosh. If you want to check out our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern, Ben Bateman and Alex Kessler, they talk about the modern format, all things competitive Magic. There's a ton of new cards coming out in Modern Horizons. Just Hogak all by himself has shaken up that format like a ton, so you probably want to hear the ins and outs
of that. Yeah, Hogak, Altar of Dementia, and there's one other card.
Bridge from Below? I know Bridge
was already, but like I'm talking about were brand new additions to Modern.
Oh, yeah.
And then also the one that's 1/1 sacrifice, put a +1/+1 counter on him.
What is that?
It's a, it's
anyway,
a zombie.
I've been seeing these pictures of like cards. Turn two with like infinite zombies on the table.
But it's crazy that you have this influx of cards from Modern Horizons, and then suddenly you have three cards going into a deck, making something sort of like really reimagining the Vengevine sort of deck. Modern Horizons is very cool what it's doing to Modern.
So if you want to get a handle on all that, Masters of Modern Podcast is the place to go. You can go into YouTube, just type Masters of Modern into your search bar. You can also find them on Twitter at the MMcast or right next to us at collected.company.
Our editors are Ashlyn Rose, Josh Murphy, and Jared Lefrenier.
Frenier. I think I'm saying it right.
I'm not.
Jared's very quiet, so he would never be like, you guys are saying my name wrong. So I think we're saying it correctly.
Thank you, Jared.
Yeah.
And special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the beautiful art behind us.
I think this is Blood Crypt.
This looks like...
Talk about maintaining a healthy playgroup.
Bring them to the dungeon behind us.
Yeah, we didn't think that one through.
Yeah, healthy playgroup through fear.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching.
Bye, everyone.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.